Hello and welcome to season 3 of Mum's Work and Chaos. We all know the saying, it takes a village to raise a child, but where is that village? Well, I started this podcast to help you find yours, and I'm joined by some amazing guests this season, talking about subjects such as fast fashion, menopause, sex education, and teenage behaviour, just to name a few. So join me this season, and I hope you enjoy this episode. Hello, and welcome to today's episode of Mum's Work and Chaos. Today, I'm joined by the wonderful Leanne Lewis, otherwise known as the Realistic Health Visitor on Instagram. And I've been following you for a while, Leanne, and I just absolutely love how realistic you actually are. So if you could just introduce yourself, tell us a bit more about you and why you started your page.
Well, first of all, thanks for asking me to come on. I've been really excited about this. I was listening to your podcast thinking, oh, I'd really love to be a part of that. And then I got the message and I was dancing around the room really happy. So thank you. So my name's Leanne and I've got two boys, one age 10, and then I've got a younger one that's just gone 2.5. So quite a big age gap. I'm a health visitor and a children's nurse. So I work with children in my job, primarily with children under 5 at the moment. That's how it works at the moment. And I started this page because working in the NHS, I realised that the service is getting less and less really what we're able to offer to families in the community. We tend to steer our service towards the families that are more in need. But I realised that actually people want to know this basic health promotion, and it's not as accessible as what we would like it to be. So I set up the page in the hope to just provide short, digestible reels with basic health promotion advice on there, and just give the answer to your questions really on things to do with children under 5 development, weaning, all those things where you have lots of questions about but you sometimes struggle to find the places where you can access it. So that's the idea of my page.
That's exactly why I started Mum's Work in Chaos though, as well, is because I think as mums of any age or stage, it's getting harder and harder to, weave your way through the minefield of parenting advice that we find online these days. And also I found when I had my first, there were loads of resources and services that seemed to be available to me. I got seen by a health visitor. We had the weekly weigh-ins at the children's centre, literally across the road from my house. So there was no way I wasn't going to go to that. There were free baby groups there as well that were run by Bernardo's that when it became Virgin Care, didn't seem to happen anymore. Oh. And then it got shut down and moved to a different health centre somewhere else that was further away. And I think that by the time I had my second, 4 years and one day apart, which was crazy, it was the beginning of lockdown, beginning of COVID. Literally, we went into lockdown the month before she was born. And after that, I just felt like we were out in the wilderness again. Everything had changed. The advice had changed between those 4 years about what you should and shouldn't do, could and couldn't do, and all of that sort of stuff. Yeah. I think it's so difficult to stay up to date with all of that information. And again, when I had my third 19 months later,
yeah, it changed.
Crazy. it seemed to be different again. And I know that there's lots of different medical studies and things that go on in between that help us stay more informed and alter the information that's provided. But I just, firstly, I think it's amazing that you stay up to date with it, let alone us having to do it too. So, but I came across your page through a mutual Instagram contact of ours, Speech Therapy with Charlotte, who's also brilliant, guys, check her out. But some of your videos really have helped me out quite recently, your homemade holiday first aid kit. I found that so useful because I'm going to be honest with you, Leanne, I tend to just chuck everything in the bag and hope for the best and then get there and find that I've lost the Calpol syringe,
Yeah.
and then I have to go out and buy a whole new bottle of
Yeah.
Calpol. But it's just the way it is, isn't it? So, actually having that reel there and you having it pinned for
Yeah.
people to go and check it out, I think that's really useful. The resources that you have on your page
Yeah.
are incredibly helpful.
Thank you. I like to, I mean, as you say, we have to keep up to date with the evidence. It's part of my role. But I call myself the realistic health visitor because being a mum of two myself, although I know all the evidence, I know that that doesn't work for every child either. And I think sometimes people are under the impression that because we do what we do and I've worked with children for such a long time and I know all the evidence, that I've just got everything together and that it's not difficult for me. But actually, I really struggle as well, in particular with my 2-year-old. It's a very challenging age. So I think I just like to really keep it real, to show people that I have these difficulties as well and I know what I should be doing, but actually it all depends on how you feel on the day, how your child's acting. You know, I know the way that I should respond to him when he's having a tantrum, but it's not always the case, you know. So I just think that by being open and honest with everybody about the struggles that I have as well, hopefully just makes it more relatable for people that I'm trying to reach.
I think that's something that a lot of us have come to realize, you know, in this day and age of reality TV, I say that very loosely because it's mostly scripted, isn't it? It's made up reality TV. And everything else online, you know, you
I
might
mean,
see,
just in general, yeah.
Yeah, you just, people show you a snippet of their day. And that's it. And it might be the most fantastic snippet of their day. And then the rest of it has been an absolute stinking pile of shit. It's been, so their kids got a packet of flour out of the cupboard, spread it all over the floor. It's just the end of the world. And I mean, I've been there, done that. If you
I've been guilty of that in the past myself, though. Sorry to cut in.
No,
But,
you're fine.
You know, I've put pictures on of my, you know, the best backdrop in my house, but then actually if you zoomed into that backdrop you'd see that there's a million greasy handprints over that wall as well, you know. So I think we're all kind of guilty of that, and sometimes I have to remind myself, like when I got bit by my toddler last week, I didn't think to share that, but then I thought, actually no, let me share this, because you know so many parents feel bad about this kind of thing, but you know it's a toddler at the end of the day. So and yeah, I go through this as well. And
I remember when my eldest started nursery and she got bitten twice by the same kid, and his mum came up to me in the car park and was really upset and kept apologizing, and I was like, he's a toddler, he's 2.5, his brain is doing amazing nitty weird things right now, and you know he's just expressing himself, don't worry about it. And she was like, but he bit your kid. And I was like, okay. You know, she'll probably bite him back. I'm sorry in advance for her biting your kid, but it's gonna happen. And you've just got to like work out what the best way to sort it out is for you. And like before we pressed record, we were saying, you know, even like the way we discipline our kids is different. And for me personally, with three, the way I discipline any of them is even individually different to each child, let alone for each family. So, you know, like my eldest, I could tell her off and she wouldn't do it again. My middle one, I could tell her off and she'd do it a bunch more times. And my youngest one would probably just like make a decision between the two.
Depending on how she was feeling on the day.
Yeah, exactly. And so, you know, kids are weird.
Put it lightly.
But yeah, it's hard. And I think as well, like the whole point of Mum's Work in Chaos as well was to be this judgment-free space for people, because you know the way you parent your kid, I might not feel I want to parent my child that way, but you know, that's, if it works for you, keep doing it, it's cool. But I'll do it my way, you do it your way, we're all good.
And like we say, they all respond to different ways of parenting. You know, so it's just about, like you say, being understanding that I might discipline in inverted commas, my child in one way, but that doesn't necessarily work for the best friend's child, you know. And yeah, I think the more we go on as parents, the more we learn that actually everybody's just doing their best. And you know, and sometimes their best might not be amazing, but that's okay. Like, who is amazing 100% of the time? Nobody is. So, you know, just don't give yourself a hard time. And I think sometimes just take it parenting and take it all back to basics, and just understand that just being present with your child is more than any shop, any toy you could buy in the shop, you know, any course that you could go and do for parenting. And like I was saying to you before we came on, that is another idea of my page, because it can become so overwhelming, you know, when you see all these things online and all these courses that you can attend for this, that and the other. And they are great. I'm not, you know, they can be really helpful, but actually they can be so overwhelming with the amount of information you get. And it doesn't have to be complicated. Parenting is hard enough as it is without making just the things that should be very basic and natural complicated, really. So that's the other idea of my page, really, is just to say, look, it's okay if you just buy some bubbles to blow for your baby. That's going to be amazing for their brain development, and it's going to cost you 50p. Yeah. You know, it doesn't have to be the most expensive toy in the shop. So yeah,
well, that's what something else I wanted to talk to you about was your latest series on baby's development. So you're doing them in sort of like age increments, aren't you? So you've got 0 to 3 months, 3 to 6, and yeah, so on. And it's to help with the overwhelm of how to help with your baby's development, isn't it?
Absolutely. I've seen really firsthand people, parents, new parents in particular, you know, that first few months of your baby's life, it's like a whirlwind, isn't it? You know, after you first had that baby, it can be so overwhelming. And it's the same with anything, isn't it? When you get overwhelmed by something, you kind of tend to back off from it. But actually, what I want to happen is for, you know, you to realise that it doesn't have to be that way. And just the very simple things like being present and with your child and spending that time talking to them from birth, you know, from a very early age, is going to help their brain development so much. And that's all that these five things are really all that you need, and they're very simple. So I just wanted to choose for each age five things which are really going to help your baby, but they don't take a lot of time. They're not expensive, not complicated. But if you can just do this throughout the day with your child, it's going to do everything for their brain development and give them a really good start in life.
Well, that's exactly it. And I mean, like when I had my eldest, we used to go to the supermarket and just walk around, and I point things out to her, like different colors and the animals on the kids' clothes, and or even like the names of fruit and stuff like that. We'd just walk around the supermarket and we'd just this sort of like development lesson, and then we pop upstairs to the cafe for a bowl of chips and a cup of juice, and it's just like a nice little afternoon out. Or I pick her up from nursery. I'd always have to do a food shop. There was never a day there wasn't something he needed. And so it was just a great little thing to do, just wander around the supermarket pointing at a packet of oranges. What's that? Orange. Yeah, cool.
And the same as in the car driving around or in the pushchair, you know, talking about the trees. I mean, have you ever seen anything more fascinating than a baby watching a tree blow in the wind? Like, they get mesmerised by it. And it's so simple. You know, and in the car, sometimes just switch off your music and talk to them about the cars that they can see. And these are really simple things, you know, but I just think people have got so overwhelmed thinking they should do so much with their children. And it's great, you know, if you've got the headspace to do that and the time to invest in it. But the fact of the matter is that a lot of us are very busy working parents, you know, and we haven't really got the time or the headspace to do our research and go and buy this and go and buy that and make sure we're doing this and make sure we're doing that. So I just wanted to keep it very simple, knowing that actually it's still going to do everything for your baby.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. It's I honestly, I love your page and I love hanging out on there and seeing all the different bits and bobs you've got on there. And as I was saying to you before we pressed record, I need to watch your transition from bottle to cup video, because my nearly 2-year-old still wants a bottle before bed. And yeah, won't she'll have a cup for everything else, but when it comes to milk, no.
Themselves to get it down there without comfort, and it is tough. I think there's a window of opportunity with that, and if you miss it, it's very, very difficult. I've missed that window of opportunity with the dummy, unfortunately. I had it with the bottle, I'd kind of got it bang on, but the dummy, I've definitely missed the window of opportunity with that one. So I know that's going to be quite tough for us. And yeah, he's 2.5 and still has a dummy, you know. So I'll never lie to you about things like that. In an ideal world, I know that he shouldn't, but you know, he loves his diddy.
My 3-year-old, who's going to be 4 in April, I've been getting slowly getting her off it. Like, she came off the bottle fine. Like, at a year, she was basically done milking a cup, happy as Larry. Yeah. But with a dummy, my youngest can go to sleep without a dummy. Is quite happy, but she'll grab them from her older sister. Indy is, as I said, she's going to be 4 in April, and we've tried giving them to Santa in an envelope. We've attempted to give them to the fairies, but she took them back. So it's so tricky. But we've now got her down to only having them at nighttime. So like during the day, they're in a drawer. We don't touch them.
Yeah,
and especially if we have visitors, she lobs them in there. She's like, "Oh, Nanny's here! Chuck them in a drawer. Let's go." But yeah, she still wants them at night time.
You're making progress with it, and that's the thing, isn't it? You know, it's I think for obvious reasons, if the children have got their dummies in their mouth all day, and then it starts to affect their teeth, the way their teeth are growing, their speech development, and things like that. You know, we've got to share that evidence. And so that's why sometimes people are not really happy with what health visitors are telling us. But we're telling you because we know the effects that it can have. But I'm not saying, you know, take the dummy off that baby straight away. I can't, because my son's still got one. But, you know, as long as you're making baby steps and you can see that progress, that's the main thing, isn't it? It's the same with everything, just making baby steps. And yeah, we need to start that for the night time now. Dummy at night time only. See, being inspired by you now with those things, and I know you.
You'll get there. You'll get there. So, I did do a Q&A box on my Instagram page, and we got some questions through from my listeners that I thought it'd be nice for us to just have a chat through. So, yeah, I've got a couple of mums here with one's got a toddler, one's got a newborn baby, and so yeah, it'd be really good if we could just have a quick chat through these, and I know they'd really appreciate actually having some answers to their questions. So first one, some days my toddler doesn't want to eat much at all. Is this normal?
Yes, very normal. It's an adult, isn't it? You know, sometimes their appetites are through the roof and we could eat everything and anything. And then other days, it's just not quite as it is. I think with food and toddlers and babies, it seems to be a real trigger point for a lot of parents, doesn't it? They really worry about the amount that their baby's eating. Are they getting enough? But actually, my advice for this is don't make a big fuss over it. If your toddler doesn't want to eat the meal that you've put in front of them, that's okay, because they have lots of opportunities throughout the day to eat. I mean, if you're offering your 3 meals a day plus 2 snacks, you know, that's 5 opportunities in the day to eat. And actually, if they don't eat any of those that day, it's okay. You know, a child will never starve themselves. They will eat when they're hungry. So, yes, it's normal for a toddler to have days where they're not My toddler is going through that at the moment. His appetite is a little bit low, but he
Yeah.
makes up for it when he gets his appetite back. So try and look at it really over the course of a week rather than individual days, if that makes sense, you know. And I say this about salt intake as well, because a lot of people get really hung up on, oh, is the toddler having too much salt in their diet, or, you know, things like that. And I say, don't look at it on a day-to-day basis. Look at it over the period of a week, and you'll probably feel so much better about it, because some days they're going to eat quite a lot, maybe too much some days, and then other days not so much. So it's okay. Just don't make a fuss over it, and they will eat when they're hungry.
Yeah, I think that's the thing, isn't it? It's tough when you've got that concern in your head. And I think as well, like from, you know, we grew up with parents of a certain generation. They were brought up in a time that was, you know, just after rationing had finished and it was a clear your plate, be grateful for what you got kind of situation. And like, you know, we both worked with Emma, a dietitian with a difference as well. And something that I started after having a chat with her on the first podcast episode that we did was to introduce an eat until you're full kind of model. And that was like we were sitting there with timers, meal times were really stressful. My eldest would get really distracted and she'd just like she's going through an ADHD diagnosis right now, which 100% makes sense as to why she can't sit down and finish a meal. But instead of like the minute you put any pressure on her, she just didn't want to do it, didn't want to do it at all. And so it was like, oh, I'm going to put on a 10-minute timer and you've got 10 minutes to eat your dinner. And if you don't eat all you, if you don't eat until you're, you know, if you don't eat all your dinner, you're not going to get an ice cream. It was like, oh my God, can you? I used to say things like that. I can't believe it now that I hear it back. But
So much guidance though, isn't there, you know, and so much advice that you can find online, and some people would tell you that's the way to do it. And actually, maybe for some children that would work, you know. But I think it's just stressful for everybody, isn't it?
yeah, but now we eat until we do eat until you're full. And then if she comes back to me within like 20 minutes of dinner being over and she's asking for a snack, then we know that you didn't eat until you're full. And so it's kind of like, oh, okay. And so I'm like, you literally have to eat your dinner until you're full. That's all I'm asking you to do. And I think that really hit home with her. She suddenly realized, oh, okay, if that's literally all you're asking me to do, then you know, it's not that bad. So
That's
yeah,
the
she's
inner way
been.
of learning, hasn't it? I guess when how to, because how do you explain to a child this is what you feel like when you're full? It's so difficult, isn't it? But actually,
Yeah.
what you've just said is a perfect way for her to learn when she comes back afterwards, and you say, "Oh, well, actually, you're not full." I mean, that is probably one of the best ways that I've heard to teach a child that they're full, because these things can be so difficult to explain sometimes, can't they?
I think everyone feels things differently, don't they? And you know, it's just really funny. Like she was explaining something, another feeling to me, and it I realized she was actually feeling quite anxious, but she didn't know how to describe it. She was like, it just feels like my tummy's going like this, and I feel like, oh, I don't want to do it. I'm like, oh yeah, that feeling of anxiety there, my love. What are you feeling anxious about? And so it's really interesting when they actually describe how they're feeling to you. Because the way they feel things and the way they describe the feeling is actually very like individual as well. But yeah, I mean, yeah, you know, my kids, some days Hannah comes home, she's as I said, she's nearly two. She'll come home from nursery and she'll be absolutely ravenous and she'll eat me out of house and home. And then other nights I'll put dinner down in front of her and she's not interested at all. She'd rather just go and watch telly and go to bed. And so, but they're the days that she's either eaten a lot at nursery or not eaten a lot. And it's just all swings and roundabouts, isn't it? Depending what time of the day. Oh, this one's a good one. My baby hates me cutting her nails. Is there anything I can do to make it easier?
No.
Yeah.
It is one of those things, isn't it? It's like the teeth brushing as well, teeth brushing, cutting nails, any kind of self-care like that. A baby doesn't realize actually we need to do this, but it is tough, but you could either do it when they're asleep, but that's not really going to teach them how to get used to it, is it? Because you're doing it while they're asleep. But you could try and make a little bit of a game out of it. So one thing I've done with my son is pretended that the scissors are crocodiles and then gone slip on his toes, and that kind of makes him laugh and he thinks it's hilarious. And actually, another thing that I've done, this is me being real, is reverse psychology. So quite often I will say to my toddler, okay, that's fine, I'm going to cut my own toenails, I'm not going to do yours. And then he'll say, oh no, I want my toenails cutting, or my fingernails cutting. So I use a lot of that. Is that bad?
No, it works.
Well,
My
works.
eldest didn't like having her nails cut either. She'd always complain that it hurt afterwards. And so I was like, oh, well, I don't think it hurts. Because sometimes, when you cut your nails, it feels a bit funny afterwards, doesn't it? Because they're a lot shorter. And so I was like, I don't think it hurts. I think it just feels a bit different, doesn't it? Oh, okay. And so I used to cut her nails in her sleep. And then when I had my second, she was well up for having her nails cut. And so my eldest started to sort of like mirror her behavior. And so it was like she'd see my younger one having her nails cut and think, oh, well, if she can do it, then I'll do it. And then sometimes as well, my middle one decides, oh, I don't want to have my nails cut. And so then I'm like, oh, okay, I'll cut mine then exactly the same. She'll come running. And then the youngest wants to do absolutely everything that both the eldest ones are doing. So the minute I get the nail clippers out, she's trying to jostle for position to get in first or have her hair done first or brush her teeth first. She wants to be first at everything. But I think it's just a case of like, if your child's got an older sibling, seeing them having their nails cut maybe might help, or even a younger sibling, if they've got a younger sibling, seeing them having their nails cut.
We pretended it on a dolly maybe, or the teddy bear, perhaps say you can cut teddy bear's nails and give them the opportunity to do it with their teddy bear. And like we were saying earlier, turn it into a bit, if you've got a girl or a boy, you could let turn it into a little spa day activity and something like that you can do. So it's just about being creative, isn't it? But role play is a great one, really, isn't it, with everything. Like if you've got, because children just want to do what you are doing, they want to be involved. So if you can, obviously not with the little scissors, you can get the baby ones are very they're not sharp, are they? And you're going to be sitting with them watching them, but let them do it to the teddy bear maybe, and pretend with or the doll in that way. I always think role play is a really good one.
My eldest, I started cutting her nails after the bath as well because they're slightly softer and easier to cut once they've had a bath as well, like especially toenails. I find sometimes they can be a bit like tricky. Okay, next one. Would you recommend snipping tongue tie or leave it as it can grow back?
So I would only really recommend having the tongue tie snipped if it's affecting your baby. So when I say affecting your baby, is it affecting the way that they're feeding? Is it affecting their weight gain? Is it affecting them perhaps with colic, breastfeeding, latching, things like that? Before this practice changes so much, and prior to COVID, babies would eat that if they had a tongue tie, it would get snipped pretty much straight away and it was done out the way. But now the criteria where I'm based has changed for that, and it's very rare actually, unless they grade it, and unless it's quite a high grade, they won't snip it. So the simple answer to that is if it's not affecting your baby, then I wouldn't. Sometimes you'll hear people say that it may cause a problem with their speech development. And this may be the case, but it may not. And so, unfortunately, there's no straight answer for this. And it's the same, really, with everything to do with children and babies. It's just a case of if it's affecting your child at present, then yes, absolutely. Go and get it graded, get your advice on it, have some feeding advice. And if it's affecting the feeding, absolutely get it snipped. But if they're growing consistently, feeding well, and it's not affecting them at that time, then there's no real need to get it done.
Yeah, and I think it also sort of, well, in my case, it depended on the sort of tongue tie they have. So like a normal tongue tie at the front, which is that part, that's easier to do than a posterior tongue tie, which is
Oh,
the one
absolutely.
that my three kids had,
Yeah,
which
that's
is
a very
great.
different, isn't it? Yeah.
So yeah,
I actually haven't come across that myself yet.
It's a really weird one. And they were saying as well that, like, if you have it snipped, because it's that muscle that goes across the back of your tongue, it's more prone to growing back and can actually be worse because then it's scarred. And so it was best to sort of leave it and see what happened. So yeah, but I was saying to you as well that my oldest now has speech therapy because she can't say the letter S properly. And they're not sure if it's linked to the tongue tie, but you know. Considering it's that element, they were saying it could be because that makes your tongue lie flatter. So instead of being able to make the proper s sound, get the arch in your tongue to do that, it could be that. So I mean, like,
Speech therapy is helping that.
it's really helping that, and I think that's the thing. Like we're happy with the route we're going down with the speech therapy and that it's working. But you know, I think that when it came down to it, part of what I was worried about, I mean, it wasn't available to me after my second because we were in lockdown. But I think part of what I was worried about was like more from an aftercare perspective with a small child, because with the again with the front tongue tie.
Very
It's just a
simple,
quick snip, isn't it?
really straightforward. It is,
But with posterior, it's because it's that whole muscle group at the back. I was more worried about, like, you know, feeding and you know, whether there could be any infection and things like that. And so I was actually quite nervous about the whole idea. So
And
yeah.
actually now, with the I know you say she's got a bit of speech, she's having speech therapy now, but I think if in hindsight, if you can look at it, actually, if that just a few sessions of speech therapy is helping to resolve that, and you looking back, would you choose to go the speech therapy route and think, well, we'll just do that, or would you think, oh, we should have just had it snipped?
No,
Or
I think part of me would still go down. I think I'd definitely still go down the speech therapy route. She's such a happy, confident child that, like, I mean, you know, I think part of me, like, if it had been me going through it when I was a kid, I think I might see myself as being like, I don't know, a bit broken, maybe. But she's not like that at all. She just sees it as another learning opportunity. She's so excited for her sessions and she really enjoys meeting with Lisa, the speech therapist, and playing the games that they play, and things like that. And so I think I'd now, in hindsight, I'd still definitely go down the speech therapy route
Yeah, that's what I'm,
then.
and that's what what's when why it comes back to when I say, if it's not causing a problem at that time, just see how things go, because there's so many different things that we could have interventions with. But sometimes I just say, step back and look at your baby. Does your baby look healthy and well? And sometimes people can over-medicalize babies who are well children in the community and don't need things over-medicalizing. I have parents come to me saying, well, they're having this much milk and it should be 150 mils per kilo and all this. And I say, no, not in the community. Your baby's a well baby. We're not medicalizing them. Look back at your baby. He's absolutely beautiful. You can see that they're thriving, and that's what's important, not the amount of milk that they're having, or is it enough, is it not enough. You can see, like, and sometimes even if there's a little bit of a drop on the centile, I say, but it's okay, look at your baby. So just take a step back sometimes and look at your child and think, actually, that is a lovely, thriving baby. And don't overthink it, but as parents, and I've done it myself, I know it's so easy to overthink things because you just want the best for your baby.
Think
And
it's very easy as well when you go to those baby groups to sit there and look at all the other babies and think that baby was born like 2 days or a week after my baby and they're already walking. My baby's not walking. But then you've also got to take in the environmental factors of that baby's home. They might have older siblings. They might, you know, my eldest didn't walk until she was 14 months. My middle one walked when she was 10 months and my youngest walked when she was 9 months.
Yeah.
And so, you know, they had good models to copy and go after.
Absolutely.
And so yeah, it's really hard. Like you don't know the different factors that are, you know, in that home or what they've been exposed to. They might have cousins of a very similar age that they see very often that means that they're speaking more and things like that. And so
it's
very easy to compare.
It really is. Yeah, but then when they get to like 10 year olds, like my biggest one, and then he's got his other friends where there's a few months difference, and because he was my first, you know, I would do exactly that. We would go out together, and I think, why is he doing that and mine's not doing that?
Yeah.
But now they're like all 9, 10 years old, and I would never look and say, actually, well, he wasn't walking until 3 months after mine, you know. So it really doesn't matter, you know. It feels big at the time, but it's really not. When they get to like 7, 8, 9, 10, they're all pretty much in that same.
Yeah, my eldest has a cousin who is 11 months older than her and a cousin who's 8 months younger than her, and you see them all playing and you can't tell the difference.
Yeah.
Like they're all happy playing together, they're all happy playing the same games.
Yeah.
And you know, respectively, they're 8, 7, and 6.
Yeah.
But like they're still happy playing together and doing the same things, so you really can't tell a difference at all.
Nobody talks about it, do they? They don't say, oh, well, remember when they were 6 months old and your baby didn't do this, but mine did, you know, who it doesn't happen, so don't
no.
worry.
No, exactly. Okay, the final question I have is a bit of a two-parter. It is from a mum with a newborn suffering from a bit of sleep deprivation. I know how you feel. Honestly, it's horrible, and especially when you're going through that cluster feeding process at night as well to sort of get your milk supply up for during the day. It's a nightmare. So I feel for you, and I know that you have an older child as well. So yeah, I know it's a lot. You'll get through it. That's from me to you now, but I'll ask your question to Leanne now. So when is best to start a bedtime routine with a newborn? By which I mean about what age? I know newborns don't do routine.
No, there's no routines all out the window, isn't it, when you've got them? And I feel for you. I know where you're coming from. The sleep deprivation is so real in that first few months, or sometimes even longer than that, first 6 months or a year, you know.
Yeah.
It's really, really tough. I've always got, you know, there's always one thing that I say about this, and I know it's really difficult and it's probably easy for me to say this now, but try and look at newborn sleep time and when they're awake in the night, try and change your mindset on it if you can. So actually it can be a really magical time, and I know I'm saying this and I'm cringing because you know, I know it's really difficult to feel it, but those night feeds where, you know, you're awake with your baby on your own and it's all quiet and calm and the TV's not on, it can actually be really magical bonding time. And I know that's really difficult when you're tired. But I always say to people, you know, try and change your mindset on it if you can. I know that's not going to be possible every night, but even if just one night out of seven, you can have that lovely bonding experience with your baby, then that's amazing. As far as routines go, I wouldn't set a routine as such, as you rightly pointed out yourself, but there are a few things that you can do to start setting good nighttime, kind of a good nighttime environment. So that would be things like, in the daytime when they're having their naps, make sure that the TV is still on in the background or the radio is, or you're still doing your hoovering or whatever it is that you want. And it's still light, so you're not putting them to bed in the dark and making it all quiet. And then on the other side of that, at night time, make sure that you're dimming the lights, making everything a little bit quieter. So you've got the two different environments. and that your baby then will slowly learn the difference between those environments, if that makes sense. So they know the difference between daytime naps and nighttime sleeps. So you can start that from straight away, really. There's no reason why you can't start that. And then the other thing that I would say is get your baby happy and used to being in their sleep environment. So whether that's in their cot or in a Moses basket or they're next to me crib in the daytime, you know, if they're happy and quite settled, pop them in there and you walk around talking to them and pottering around doing what you would normally do, so they can see that this environment is a happy, safe place. It's not somewhere that I only go at night time and this is when everything goes dark. And I know this sounds like a really big thought process for a baby, but actually we know that babies' brains are developing the fastest that they ever will in the first 2 years of their life. So actually they're soaking everything in like a sponge. So
yeah,
teaching them that actually this is a happy, safe place for me because I'm here and my mum is still talking to me and it's light, and you know, is a really good practice to kind of get into as well. And then of course you've got your, as they get a little bit older, so perhaps around the 3-4 month mark, you can start loosely introducing that, well, you know, story time before bed. I mean, stories from when they're born, absolutely. But as part of a loose bedtime routine, if you hope to do your bath story bed or your wash story bed or whatever it is, you can loosely introduce that as well. Obviously, if your baby's overtired, not tired, and you're trying to read a book to them and they're just screaming, then that's why I say loosely. But if you can start introducing 2 or 3 steps which indicates that this is the time, then it's going, things are going to start to settle down, you can start that really as well.
Yeah, with my middle one, we she'd sit with us while I read the story to my eldest and things as well. But with my eldest, what I'd do was, she had jaundice when she was first born, and so I used to put her Moses basket by the back window where we get the most sunlight anyway, to try and help clear that up. And so we just sort of naturally napped in the daytime with the curtains open and things anyway, because it was a continuation from that. But then when I was transitioning her from the Moses basket or the crib to the cot and putting her in her own room,
yeah,
I started off with putting her down in her cot during the day for naps with the curtains open, and she was still in the crib with us in the nighttime.
Yeah.
And so I started that from about 5 months, and then by the time she was 6 months, she was happy in her cot, and she was in her cot in her own room at nighttime as well.
Yeah, it does. Getting them used to that bedroom and their cot and things, you know, it does make a really big difference. I think sometimes people avoid doing that, and then it's a big shock to the system, isn't it? So it's like a gradual introducing it to them. And
yeah, she went through a huge, humongous sleep regression by the time she was one, and it was as I stopped breastfeeding her. Wow. And it meant having to rock her to sleep, which was a long and hard process, singing and rocking. So sleep, like as you said, sleep is hard at any age. I still have my three-year-old come down every now and again and wake me up to ask me random questions in the night.
I think as well, sometimes when you think you've got it down, like you think, oh, we've cracked it, we've got this sleep sorted, then something happens, like they start teething, or you stop breastfeeding, you know, and or they're not well, and then it's all up in the air again, isn't it? And you're just like, it's like this up and down, isn't it, all the time? But I still think when it is up and down like that, you can still keep that loose routine of 3 steps, whatever that those 3 steps might be, like dimming the lights, story time, wash time, whatever you choose to do, whatever that entails, you know, you can still loosely keep that. And that's probably the best thing that you can do. But it's always going to be up there. So never be fooled that once it's cracked, because something usually comes to disturb it. But
there's always something. Like in the case of us, we moved house about 6 weeks ago. And then 2 weeks ago now, we lost our dog, who was 11 years old. And although the younger two haven't really, I wouldn't say they haven't really noticed, they know she's not there. But they don't know, they haven't asked any questions as to why. My oldest is very aware of what's going, of what happened and what was going on. But the younger two know that she's not there. And although haven't really shown any like major sadness or anything, because we haven't like sat down and explained it to them, they've both sort of expressed it in different ways. So like my middle one's come down to sort of like, and been like, oh, where is she? And then my youngest actually woke up crying last night for her, which is really strange. So yeah, it's been a bit of an odd one. But I mean, like, even just moving house, I thought their sleep would be all over the shop, but actually they slept better.
Yeah. So you just love it when that happens, when you really think the worst of something and then it goes the complete opposite way and you're just like,
Well, we moved from a 2-bed semi, and the three girls were having to share one bedroom, to a 3-bed, and so with huge bedrooms. And so my younger two are still sharing, which I think they like. And then my eldest has her own space, and she's like, oh, I got my own room, I got my own space. This is great. And we're in a converted bungalow as well, so my husband and I have the downstairs bedroom, so we're not traipsing up the stairs late at night making noises, and so they're not then waking up because we're, you know, downstairs. And
yeah, but you don't think of all these things, do you? You know, you don't think that, I guess when you bought the bungalow, you never, or moved into the bungalow, you never thought, actually, this will, but then when you're in there and you realise, oh, actually, this is a real benefit, you know, there can be so much to think about that might make your life easier, but it's just, things are a minefield.
When we first moved in here, I was like, we both agreed it felt really weird sleeping downstairs, and we were worried we'd feel, like, less safe because we're downstairs. But actually, it's come with so many more benefits. We're close to the kitchen in case of midnight snacking. We're close to the lounge. We can watch telly in the lounge without the kids like coming down every 5 seconds and being like, ah, aren't you upstairs watching telly? Can I sit in bed with you and watch telly? No. and all of that sort of stuff. And so, yes, there are multiple benefits to buying a bungalow, people.
Yes. My friend into a bungalow, and she said, I don't have to keep going up and down the stairs to put the ironing away. And I was like, oh yeah, that's amazing.
Unfortunately, I still have that.
Well,
because the kids are upstairs. But they've just got so much more space, and my eldest loves having her own room. And like, when you can't find her, it's generally because she's actually like in her room crafting or drawing and doing things at her little desk that we got her, and she just really loves having that space to herself to do her things, which is really lovely.
At that age now, isn't she, where you will find that she's going to be enjoying her own space and distancing herself, I guess, from her little sisters a little bit more, having her own time. But
then she does love them. She's such a good, she's like a proper second mummy to them as well. Oh. And so she, and I think that's the other thing, was that as she's got older, because there's a 4-year age gap between her and the middle one, she enjoys, like, she can play with Indy really well, and she can also play with Hannah really well. But it's a really different thing when you take one of them out of the equation. All the parameters change, and suddenly things get calmer. And so it's really odd. But she loves reading. My oldest loves reading, and so like at night time now, she'll read to my middle one before bed. Wow. And so she's like, oh, I'm just gonna read Indy a story before bed. I'm like, oh, okay.
How did you get her to love reading? Because we have not achieved that with my oldest son, and I'm like, I hoped, he loves having stories read to him, and he still does, and he's 10 years old, but to get him to read,
it was a huge leap of faith from the school, if I'm honest with you. She really struggled with changing her mindset around phonics, and so she kept reading with like phonics in mind, and so like it was the simple word she could read, dangerous, off a page, and it was like, pythons are dangerous, and it was like, you just read the word pythons and dangerous perfectly. And then you've just, pythons are dangerous, they can Can? Why did you sound out can? Like, you know the word can. You didn't need to phonicize can, like, just read it. And she's like, oh, I don't know. I just did it. And it's like, oh. But it got so stuck into her head. She's a real rule follower. And so
Wow.
it got like stuck into her head that they want me to read it phonetically. And so I must read phonetically. And so although she could read the simple words, she was still sounding them out phonetically. And so in the end, like her teacher said to her, look, I want to move you on to the next load of books, the next books up. I'm going to give you a quiz. You've got to take the quiz. And if you read properly without the phonics, we can move you up to the next load of books and you can get the thick books with the chapters. She was like, oh. And so this challenge really affected her. And so just before they just as they started the summer term, they moved her up. She did the quiz and she passed it with flying colours and she was so happy. She loves the challenge and she loves the rules. And so the minute like her teacher said to her, the rules have changed. We don't need to do this anymore. Because I tried saying it to her, it didn't work. My friend who goes in to read at school said it to her, didn't work. The minute her teacher told her, the authority figure said, the rules have changed, we don't need to read phonetically anymore. She suddenly, oh, fireworks, I've got it now. I know what's going on. But that being able to move up to the next level really boosted her confidence and made her believe in herself because she absolutely hated reading in reception in year one. She would cry anytime I asked her to read, and she wouldn't read with me. She'd read at school, but she wouldn't read with me. And I think she felt very, I think she actually felt a quite a high level of shame about how good she was at reading and how good she was at English in general. And it's not an easy subject. It's a very hard subject because, you know, our language is a mishmash of everything. You know, you've got Nordic languages shoved in with French and German and everything else. And it's just like, mate, we've just cannibalized everything and turned it into English. It doesn't make any sense. And so the fact that there's, you know, all the different types of there and and all of that stuff as well, it doesn't help. And so I think she really struggled a little bit. But
Some of the homework my son comes down with, I think to myself, I ain't got a clue what this is.
no.
It's another level, isn't it?
She came home with partitioning in year two, and I was like, I've no idea what partitioning is.
What is
I was like,
that?
husband, you know maths, come here. You change her maths. So
I'm
yeah,
strapped
he does maths and I do English. That's the way we do
to
it.
people. Yes,
But
it's
yeah. I'm pretty sure she teaches me most of the time, not the other way around.
absolutely.
Oh, well, thank you so much for joining me today, Leanne, and thank you for telling us more about you and your page and answering questions. If anyone has any more questions that have arisen from listening to this podcast, I'm sure you'd be more than
Yeah,
happy to
absolutely.
ask
Send
your
them
questions on
over.
your page.
Yeah, definitely. I always get back to people that send me my DMs, whether that's not necessarily straight away, but I make a conscious effort to, get back to them because, like I say, the idea of my page is to support people that don't find it difficult to access the service. So I'm really happy to help. I know all the evidence. I know the way things should be done. And I was saying to you earlier, wasn't I? I think sometimes parents want a direct answer of this is what you've got to do and it will work, but that's not parenting and that's not
No.
children, unfortunately. Or
It's a hard
fortunately, because
one.
we don't want to suppress the way that our kids are, do we? So I can give you advice, yes, but please don't feel pressured to do things in certain ways because you see on social media or there's this really in-depth course that you've done with lots of information. Just, like I say, keep it simple, take a step back and look at your children and think, well, are they happy? Are they thriving? And those are the main things, really. And just
Oh, brilliant.
be
Well,
present.
thank you so much for joining me. And everyone can find you on Instagram at the realistic underscore health visitor underscore as well. So I'll make sure to put your Instagram handle in the show notes so
Thank you
everyone
so
can
much.
click on there afterwards. But thank you so much for joining me. It's been a real pleasure to talk to you today.
Yes, it has. Thank you. Thanks a lot.
If you enjoyed this episode of Mum's Work and Chaos, please make sure to subscribe on whatever podcasting channel you're listening on at the moment. Or if you'd like to get involved, feel free to email me at mumsworkandchaos@gmail.com or follow us on Instagram at mumsworkandchaos. See you then.